Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Dave Hodgson, The Daily.
Say hi, Dave.
Right, I'm delighted to welcome onto Talk Radio Europe Sir Roger Bannister. Good afternoon. How are you, Roger?
Good afternoon.
Can I call you Roger? Is that okay?
You may do, yes.
Or sir. I don't know.
The Queen called me sir, so there we are.
Oh, I'll call you sir then, sir. Okay. Now, you've finished the autobiography Twin Tracks, and yes. That must have been quite a feat to write a book about your life.
Well, I felt somebody else might do it, so I might as well get in first. But it's actually my second autobiography. The first one I wrote when I was 25 and was just retiring from running and starting as a medical doctor, and decided that I wanted to make a clean break. And so I wrote about my running career then. And it's taken me 60 years now to add my medical career to it.
So when you were a child, was it running or medical or both that was catching your attention?
Well, it was both, but I realized that I did have a running, I did have a capacity for running, which was obvious when I was at school. But then I had to work pretty hard for my exams to get into Oxford, and of course from then on I was partly a medical student and partly a runner until 1954, when I qualified as a doctor and ran the 4-minute mile and then defeated John Landy and then won the European 1500 meter championship. So those were a series of major events, and I felt then that I could retire. I had been very disappointed by my performance at the Helsinki Olympics, when I was actually the favorite for the 1500 meters, but there was a conspiracy in a sense of having to run on three successive days, which was something I'd never prepared for, and which is something which has never been called for before or since. But in any case, there was no excuse. And the British press were really quite heavy on me for having, as it were, disappointed them.
Was that back in 1952?
That was in 1952, yes.
And you, it's a British record that you broken, but didn't that get the...
Yes, good enough. The first eight of us broke the Olympic record, but I came fourth, and no medals, and one member of the British press said that they ought to sue the British athletics team for an offence against the Trade Descriptions Act because they had expected medals, and the only medal in Helsinki on the track was on the stadium was by a horse called Fox Hunter.
Well, you know, they're a little bit faster. But what about for you? What did that do to you, Roger, at that time? Did that have the potential to bring you down or the potential to spur you on to prove yourself?
Well, it had the potential to spur me on. I realized that if I had won the 1500 meters in Helsinki, I would have retired because it was becoming more difficult to combine with my medical studies. But if I had retired then, having won an Olympic medal, I would be one of 20 or so Olympic medalists, and there wouldn't be any need for me to write a book. But it was really my response to the disappointment of Helsinki that led me to realize that I had just the capacity, the possibility of running for another 2 years into 1954, and that during those 2 years I would have to race against John Landy, who had then been in Australia, broke 4.3 seconds on six occasions, and then said, "It's like a brick wall, I'm not going to attempt it again." But of course he did, and I, as a medical student, knew that there really couldn't be any absolute barrier or portcullis that came down at 4 minutes 1.2 seconds, which was the Swedish record, and it was really only a question of getting the right conditions and running it as an even pace run, which would bring it under 4 minutes. And I knew that I'd have to do that to be certain of breaking the Commonwealth or Empire Games record and defeating John Landy.
So you had an edge with your medical knowledge, and your medical knowledge was saying there's no reason, given the right circumstances, that this cannot be broken.
That's true, yes. I'm not sure that it took any very deep medical knowledge to appreciate that. But I certainly used the methods of trial and error, which is a fundamental medical approach to things, to decide how I should train. And if I trained too hard and was exhausted the next day, then I had to lighten my training a little and so on.
And so I'm told that the day actually was quite blustery, so the conditions were probably not the best that you could have for this particular record break. What was the day like for you when you first arrived?
Well, it was such a high wind blowing that I thought that it was hopeless attempting the record, because with a wind blowing, you'd have to do the equivalent of 3:56 mile, and I wasn't sure I could do that. But Franz Stampfl, who was a coach to all three of us, he said, "I think you can run a 3:56 mile," and he said, "Moreover, if you have half possible conditions and decide not to attempt it, you may not forgive yourself for the rest of your life."
Exactly.
And I think the rest of the day I was pondering that, and then I was watching a flag on a church steeple, and I thought just around 6 o'clock it was fluttering as though the wind was dropping a little, and so I said to the two Chris's, "Yes, well, we'll go for it."
Wow. And you came in at 3 minutes 59.4 seconds, and apparently the last part of that announcement wasn't heard because the crowds were cheering.
That's true, yes. Norris McWhirter, who is a friend of mine, later famous for the Guinness Book of Records, he said he practiced in the bath that morning making the historic announcement, which he hoped would come to pass. And he started off saying the result of event number 7, the 1 mile, the winner is R.G. Bannister of Exeter and Merton Colleges, in a time which, subject to ratification, will be a new track record, a new British all-comers record, a new English record, a new British Empire record, a new European record, a new world record.
Wow.
And then he said, in a time which, subject to ratification, will be, and then he only got the 3 out, and the rest was drowned in the noise of the crowd.
What I suppose people over the years, Sir Roger, have asked you this question time and time again, but what was that moment like? Can you remember the feelings that were going through you at the time?
Well, it was a feeling of massive relief because I'd spent 2 years trying to get closer and closer to it. Things had gone fairly according to plan, apart from the weather. So I was enormously relieved. But, of course, within 2 months, John Landy had broken the record, and he ran it in 3:58. We had to have the race in Vancouver, and if he had beaten me in that Vancouver race, then I should have been forgotten. And,
yes.
It's Landy who would have been history.
And it's amazing. We're talking about just a small fraction of time and history. The door, as somebody once said, the door of history turns on very small hinges, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Second at 15 miles an hour is about, I don't know, it's 10, 12 yards. So that was the margin by which it had to be broken.
And even to this day, I'm told that more men have conquered Mount Everest than actually have achieved that. So, again, it's just an amazing achievement and, I suppose, a defining moment in your life. But what happens next for you? Because you go and follow your medical career, don't you?
Yes, I'd always intended to become a neurologist, and it's a particularly demanding branch of medicine. And it wasn't until 1963 that I eventually became a consultant neurologist at two London hospitals. And then from then on, my medical career was predominant until 1985, and then I was asked to come back to be the head of a college in Oxford. And by the time I had retired as head of the college in Oxford, that was in 1993, and by then I had two daughters living in Oxford. I had nine grandchildren in Oxford, and so my wife and I have lived very happily in Oxford ever since then.
And it's a great life, but as you look back on your life, having to write the book, and it makes you look back, and as an athlete or a neurologist, which gives you the most satisfaction in your life?
Well, being a neurologist, of course, much greater satisfaction, but it doesn't happen to be dramatic, and so isn't a matter of public interest.
Well, is that an issue there? Because for you, impacting people's lives on a personal level, and you've impacted people's lives on a general level with the Olympics and so on, and breaking records. But for you, it's the impacting people's lives on a personal level, which has probably had more of an effect on you.
It has indeed, and I looked after thousands of patients during the course of my neurological career, and that has given me a great and deep satisfaction.
I suppose meeting the Queen was quite satisfying as well. What was that like for you?
Well, I met her on a number of occasions, but the first time was at the British Championships in 1952, before going to Helsinki. Then I met her at the opening of the Lillieshall Sports Centre, and then I met her subsequently on more than one occasion in the torch relay for the Commonwealth Games, and then another occasion. So there were a number of meetings, and she's exceedingly gracious, and it's always been a pleasure to have met her.
And it must be quite an honour for you as well to be called Sir Roger Bannister.
Yes, that was because I was the chairman of the first Independent Sports Council from 1970 to 1974, and that was a really quite an interesting period of years because the government, I think very rightly, had decided that just as there was a BBC controlling broadcasting, and just as there was an Arts Council controlling the arts, sport and recreation, and high-level sport, they were really worthy of being the recipient of some government or taxation money.
Mm.
That's really what it was. And so I was in charge at the time. The Royal Charter was the mechanism that was used, taking it out of party political battles. And I think that the way in which the public money was made available on increasing the scale, I think I had 30 million a year, and now for the London Olympics was more than 300 million.
Wow.
I think that that really made a difference and enabled our athletes to be able to train much harder, and led, I think, to the very successful performances in the London Olympics.
I was going to ask you about that. Must have been quite rewarding to see the legacy, I suppose, of those days playing out before us in London.
Yes, I mean, I was very pleased, and I think it's quite right that the very most elite of our athletes should be supported by government grants so that they don't have to work at a job and can they can spend 3 hours a day or more hours a day in training, which I think is very proper for a few years at any rate.
Certainly is. And I was going to ask you also about the actual record today, because I was looking on the internet before the show starts. I couldn't find what the existing record is. Do you happen to know?
3:43.
Wow. Yeah. So that's...
You have to allow, Sebco said it's the tartan track is 4 seconds faster over a mile, so that brings you to 3:56.
And what about trainers as well? Development?
I think that runners only really attack the record as it then is, so that we attacked 4 minutes because that was when where the record was. But nowadays, I think it's most of the runners who are able to break that new world record will come from East Africa, because they live at altitude and they have special advantages.
Yeah. Well, Sir Roger, I hope you don't mind me saying, but you're a little bit older now. Are you still running?
I'm not. I've actually got a condition called Parkinson's disease,
So
I'm not really able to walk even, let alone run. But I'm very content.
You sound very content, and the book's called Twin Tracks. It's the autobiography of Sir Roger Bannister, a great life and a great read. And I'd like to thank you for spending some time with us this afternoon, Roger. Thank you.
Thank you very much, too. It was nice to talk to you.
Really appreciate it. Thank you. God bless.
Goodbye.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.